Scholars Movie News, your weekly source for film headlines, previews, and reviews, all in glorious podcast form. I'm Chris.
And I'm Jill. And with us, as always, we have fellow Geek Scholars Fox.
Hello, everyone.
And Lauren.
Hi, guys. So we've arrived at episode 100.
Woo! Century Club.
Century Club.
Which marks nearly 2 years of Geek Scholars Movie News podcast. And to mark the occasion, we're making this a very special episode, which we've half-jokingly been calling The Story So Far. So today you're going to get a little history of the show and how it all came together and how we've managed to keep it coming together week after week. But fear not, movie lovers, we will do a rundown of this week's headlines just to keep you aware of what's going on out there in the world. So let's get right to it, shall we?
Outstanding.
We shall. I would like to start out, if I can, Lauren, something I don't think we're going to cover today in this week's show, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is Vin Diesel and Marvel. And almost every week I feel like we get a new story about this, and so I just wanted to quickly comment about this. Today or yesterday morning, Vin Diesel changed his Facebook profile picture to that of Groot, or at least a Groot-looking creature from Guardians of the Galaxy, making Vin Diesel the greatest marketing genius of all time.
Yeah.
Now, there's absolutely no confirmation that he will be voicing Groot in Guardians of the Galaxy, but I want to say this. You know, I remember when J.J. Abrams was going through this entire thing with Benedict Cumberbatch and the villainry, and people eventually got tired of it, right? They just didn't enjoy it. They liked the idea of the mystery, but basically all he did was misdirect and or lie to people. What I love about what Vin Diesel is doing is he's basically acknowledging all the rumors head on and just messing with people. He's so far taken a picture in front of an Ant-Man comic. He's also said twice he was thinking about playing Thanos, and now he's putting out a picture of Groot. I love what he's doing. We have no idea what he's doing, but I want to give him kudos. We're not going to cover it because we still really have no clue what he's...
There's no actual news here. He's just being playful.
Except that he should be the assistant marketing director of Marvel going forward, because he's doing such a good job of playing around people's emotions regarding his involvement.
Well, we are looking for a new intern, so maybe Vin Diesel will apply.
Yes, maybe that's true. Good point.
Well, thanks for that, I think. But for the real headlines, we're going with a thumbs up, thumbs down format. So I give you the headline, you say yay or nay. Got it?
Got it.
Okay, here we go. This one's kind of a, well, it's kind of a four-parter. Bruce Willis is out. Harrison Ford, Mel Gibson, and Antonio Banderas are in for Expendables 3. Thumbs up or down?
So it's up, up, down, left, right, BA, select, start. Chris, I think I know why I never beat Contra. Okay. But going back, it's an up that Bruce Willis is out. Even though I really enjoyed him in the Expendables 1 and 2, the reason he's out is because he was being asked to shoot over 4 days, and they offered him $3 million to do so.
Wow.
He said, no, I want $4 million to do so, and Stallone basically said, are you out of your bleeping mind?
For real.
I have to agree with Stallone on this, and I'm happy he's calling him out on this. Bruce Willis is an iconic actor, but to be trying to milk this for more than it's worth, which is just supposed to be pure fun and a bunch of friends getting together, is kind of a shame. Going on to the other ones, always happy to see more Harrison Ford. I'm not as happy about Mel Gibson. I think he's past his prime, and I do love me some Antonio Banderas. I'll let you guys speak to those a little bit more in detail.
All right, I'm going to go down, up, down, up. So I'm the Bruce Willis fan on the podcast. Sure. I have to say I'm sad about that. Harrison Ford, definitely excited. Mel Gibson, I was trying to remember the last movie of Mel Gibson's that I even watched, let alone liked. And I think it was Signs, which came out in 2002. It's just been way too long. So that's why he's getting it down. And then, of course, we love Antonio Banderas.
I'm complete with you, Jill. Bruce Willis is going to be a big hole in this movie. Harrison Ford is a blast always in the theater. Mel Gibson is never going to sell me a ticket. But Antonio Banderas, he is too sexy.
I think it's a great act. I think he could be a lot of fun with us.
I totally agree. Totally agree.
Okay. So this next one there is a correct answer for. So defy me if you dare. Tom Hiddleston confirms he will not be in the Avengers Age of Ultron. Tragedy.
Okay. Defied. I loved him as a villain, Lauren. I'm completely with you. But it's Avengers 2. They should move on. It doesn't make sense with this storyline. Sorry, Tom Hiddleston. Stick with Thor for now on.
Yeah. I know you're technically correct, but still.
Loki is a fantastic character. He's been a great villain for them.
Awesome.
I absolutely agree. Tom Hiddleston is outstanding on every level as a human being, an actor, and a villain. So I'm giving this a thumbs down. That said, it is completely reasonable that they would not bring Loki back for a third time to be the villain.
I think you're only saying
you're
within smacking distance.
I appreciate your desire
yes.
not to sleep on the couch tonight. Fox, we will go to you.
I'm going to have to side with Jill on this. It's a thumbs up he's not in this because lest they get into the X-Men syndrome where Magneto and or William Stryker is the villain in almost every movie. There's so many great villains to explore in the Avengers universe. I'm happy to see them knowing when to go out on top, and I think this is the time to do it.
That's right, Fox.
Traitors. All right, fine, fair enough. Moving on. Now You See Me sequel apparently in the works. What say you?
I'm giving this a thumbs up, although a cautious thumbs up. It isn't really a surprise they're going to do a sequel. They worked pretty hard to set up a sequel potential in the end of the last movie. The first one felt pretty original despite its flaws, so I'm on board.
I'm giving it a thumbs up, and I'm doing that trick where you pretend like your thumb is moving away from your hand and all the kids laugh. No, this is a good thing, right? Now You See Me had some real big problems with it in terms of figuring out what the pacing was going to be like. And yeah, you're all laughing at that. They can't see it, but you're laughing. I know you are. And I want to revisit these characters. I think the idea of a magician con heist team is really clever, and I would like to see where this goes as long as they build off of the obvious issues you and I talked about before, Chris.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with thumbs up, too. I like the concept of a franchise here. Well, we talked about this a little bit last week when we were talking about franchises. You need a set of good characters to start, and I think that these characters could bring that.
I agree.
Okay, we've also found out that the Horrible Bosses 2 director Seth Gordon has dropped out of the project.
This is a thumbs down, and it's for a couple different reasons. One, I don't know that Seth Gordon was the cause of all the greatness that was Horrible Bosses.
Right.
Two, I don't know that his involvement makes that much of a difference to this project overall. We're getting most of the same characters, if not all the main cast, back. So I think they were the ones to make this funny. It'll be on their shoulders whether or not it's going to be funny again.
I think this is a thumbs up. I just can't see number two having quite the same magic as number one. It's really hard to recreate that. And I think it may be better to have a different set of eyes on it. Someone new, kind of some new blood to get some new ideas going kind of take it maybe in a slightly different direction.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, I think you've actually changed my mind on that, Jill. I was going to say thumbs down, but now I'm saying thumbs up because I agree. He was not bringing the magic to this, Fox, like you said. This is really about the cast, so I'm on board.
I love how we're all changing our issues.
You guys are killing me. Fox doesn't know what his opinion is. Jill changed hers in midstream, and Chris changed his because Jill changed hers.
She made a good argument.
Jesus, okay. Nobody made it through that with their original opinion intact. Little did I know that when I explain thumbs up, down, every time we do it, it's for you guys, not for the audience. I really realize
the audience
that
understands.
Yeah, yeah, they get it.
It's you guys who can't figure
it out. I'm a little confused.
Okay. Clearly.
All right. So we also know that DiCaprio is eyeing a true story Viking picture called King Harald. What do you think about this?
I like this. This is a thumbs up from me. So if you don't remember who King Harald is,
you don't.
I know. I mean, you know, for the small percentage of our audience.
Small percent.
He was an 11th century conqueror that was kind of known as the last great Viking king. And you could kind of see from that, this is being described as sort of a Braveheart style movie. I think that's going to be the idea. There's going to be lots of big battles. And I can really see DiCaprio fitting into this role.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a really interesting story. I'm giving this a thumbs up. Harald Hardrada was a fascinating historical figure. And I don't know if you know this. He actually lost a battle early and got kind of thrown out of his country. Mm-hmm. So he just took a bunch of his buddies and went and fought a whole bunch of wars in other entirely different parts of the world, collected fame and riches, and then went back and conquered his home country. Cool dude. And I think DiCaprio would be a fun turn for him as well.
Cool dude, yes. But it's a thumbs down for two different reasons there, Chris all and right. Jill. First of all, have you ever seen the depiction of a Viking? Human beings were born and bred way differently than they are today. And pretty boy Leonardo DiCaprio, as great of an actor as he is not a hulking Viking. And I just can't see it. There are so many other things his name has been attached to that I would much rather see him in. Second of all, Vikings are all great and whatnot, but there's so much Viking paraphernalia going on right now. Showtime just put out a new series called Vikings, which is doing very well. And I'm a little afraid that even though he's had Appian Way, his production company, has had his eye on this for a while. I'm afraid Vikings are becoming like a new fad, like wolves or werewolves rather, and vampires. And I just don't, I'd rather see his efforts put someplace else.
Vikings, the new vampires.
I'm kind of shocked that you just said that you thought that Leonardo DiCaprio was too small for this role. You and I are always having this argument, or at least we did for a lot of years, and you were always on the side of DiCaprio being a big guy. He's big.
No,
he's
not a big guy. He's just an older guy than you. You used to say he looked 13. There's a difference between saying he's hulking and big and saying he looks 13.
Jill, I knew you were mad at him, but I couldn't figure out if it was over Leonardo DiCaprio, over him saying that Vikings are like an alternate breed of human that's
they
just
are.
Naturally larger.
Maybe not so PC.
It's not PC.
Don't buy into the Viking hype.
Human beings are not nearly as muscular and as well built
right,
as they were.
Putting the kibosh on this, that about wraps it up for news this week. So now it's on to the story
so far. It's fact. It's biological fact. You did not say that.
Biological fact? Yes.
He tells the biologist who practices medicine.
She's not a biologist.
Okay. Rein it in, folks. We got to talk about us now. Hold it together. Okay. So go way, way back with me now. Are you ready? It all starts back in Washington, D.C. with four friends, two couples, in fact, living across the street from one another, working downtown, living the good life, playing a lot of rock band.
Like you do.
Watching IMDb's 100 Worst Movies Ever Made.
That was so bad.
Yeah, so
they
bad.
They were really quite poor.
We won't say how many we made it through.
And then two of those friends, one from each couple, the boys, decided to ruin it all by moving their spouses to opposite ends of the country and starting graduate
school. And bettering our lives.
Terrible life choice.
Yeah. Yeah. But one day, they decided to start a podcast, just for the fun of it, but also because it meant that they would get to hang out for an hour or so every week, even if it was just through the interwebs. But before we get any further into the backstory, why don't we go through real quick and tell the listeners what we are each responsible for on the show? Fox, we'll start with you.
Sure. So I believe my official title, even though I've changed it like six or seven times, is producer. And so basically that means that I'm in charge of the weekly show's content. I'm the one scouring the websites, reading the press releases, things like that, deciding what we're going to basically talk about each week. I also help manage the website. I publish the show, and I also handle almost all the public relations. So when you write in with something you are happy about or not happy about, I'm usually the one getting back to you to make sure that you are more happier than when you first wrote us. So when Chris basically says Man of Steel is the worst thing ever and you decide to tell us that he should be fired, I'm the
Fox
one trying
the
to
one
explain
that has
why
to deal
he shouldn't
that.
Be. Right.
Yes, exactly. Well, speaking of Chris, we'll go to you next.
All right. I do all of the audio engineering and editing here for the show. So I make you sound as wonderful as you do.
So
and
sexy.
When you fail at sounding intelligent, I cut that part out of the show. And or put it at the end. I also do all of the photography that goes up on our site.
Yep, that is true. And I'll go next. I am, as you might have guessed, sort of the host moderator on the show here. I'm also kind of the on-set director, if you will.
I think you just put that exactly to the test like 2 minutes ago where you basically just cut me off mid-sentence.
Exactly, yes. A lot of that. A lot of telling people what to do. I'm good at it. What can I say? But also a lot of trying to impact the tone and the direction of what we're doing week to week. And I'm also the spelling and pronunciation Nazi. So there you have it. Jill?
How'd I do on Harold Hardrada?
That was
not
pretty
good.
Sorry.
Not good.
Oh,
Jill?
I like it.
Sorry, Harry.
So I'm also one of the hosts, one of the four hosts. And then I guess I would put myself in the role too of self-appointed fact checker. So mm-hmm. I like history. If it says, quote, based on a true story, if it says biopic, I like reading the source material. I like delving into where it came from. And then I like yelling at people when they get it wrong. Mm-hmm. I also like science and technology and medicine. And so if it has to do with that, I'm also happy to yell at you.
Nice.
If they get it wrong, I hope. Not
if,
just
oh,
yelling.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. If
no, I mean, we're all pretty happy to yell at each other any opportunity we get. So.
A lot of anger this show.
Okay.
100
now
episodes
let's take
and
it.
Not a single one more.
Okay, now let's take it back to the start of the show, which means turning to the one who gets everything started around
yes.
here. And that would be Fox. This was your idea in the beginning.
Yes.
How and when did the podcasting bug bite you?
Okay, so I was off to Austin, Texas. I was visiting a college friend of mine, and I was ironically not going to the South by Southwest Film Festival. I don't even think I knew what it was at that point. And Jill had gotten into podcasting, right? So you had started listening to a lot of different podcasts, mostly from NPR, and you said, well, you're going to be on this flight. I had long connecting flights. You should start listening to podcasts. And I said, well, I don't like podcasts. You said, well, why don't you listen to some about movies? So I did that, and I was like, man, I've really missed out on all these awful podcasts. And I didn't like them. And I will not state, I don't think many of them that I listen to are still on the air, so we're nothing against those. But I saw a gap. I saw a fact that I wanted a show about news, and I wanted a show that gave me headlines and casting decisions like that. And most of the shows that I listened to were basically movie reviews that were longer than the actual movies. And that sort of made me upset. I thought
it's not an exaggeration in some cases.
Really, yeah.
These are things that actually happened.
And I saw an opportunity because basically whenever I hang out with my friends, all I do is talk about movies. And so I thought, well, wouldn't that be interesting? So anyway, Brian and I were trying to relive our college days very poorly. We went out and had what I would call a wild night for a person of my age. And I remember I called Jill and I thanked her very much for all the podcasts she sent me, but I said, I want to do my own. And this was in a very enhanced state. And so much so that I told her, and she was very nice and said, that sounds nice. Why don't you take some Advil
always
and some water.
Always the supportive wife.
Yeah. So, you know, like, well, you know, patted me on the head across the telephone. And then I proceeded to hang out with her and text Chris. And I texted him something like, have you ever thought about doing a podcast? And his response was, it was kind of like, you ever saw the end of Mallrats where they asked Brody to like, have you ever thought about hosting your own Tonight Show? Yeah. You know, and so that's kind of the response I got.
I'll tell you exactly how it went down. You sent both of us simultaneously a text message.
Yeah,
and all
sure.
it said was, hey, do you want to do a podcast? And I believe our exact response was, sure, about what?
Yeah. And I think that was how it started. And I think everyone assumed that the next morning, with the hangover that was inevitable, the idea would go away.
Yeah. So speaking of which, Chris, what was your initial reaction when you got word from Fox that this was the next in his long line of great ideas?
Yeah, Fox 2 is tremendous credit, is an ideas man. Fox, yes. Nobody is more enthusiastic about an initial concept than Fox.
Well, thank
he,
you.
He really goes
That's
for it
truth.
Right out of the gate.
I just happen to have 100 of them a week is the problem.
Yeah.
I feel like Fox went to Comic-Con all those years ago and came out and said, wow, this was fun. I wish we were press. What if we were press? Let's start a podcast and we'll be press. Then we'll go to Comic-Con with press passes. To which my kind of response was, one does not simply walk into the press corps. But I do totally love podcasts, and I'd really been looking for a creative outlet because I do all this sort of awful math and computer programming for my graduate degree all day long. So this was exactly what I was looking for, and you asked exactly the right question.
And Jill, what about you? How did you feel about it from your end?
Yeah, well, I think to be fair, too, to Fox, he's been a film critic for a long time.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't such a big jump. And I think as his partner, I've learned to have faith in a lot of those kind of crazy harebrained ideas and to just jump both feet in. And so, sure, why not? You want to do a podcast? Let's do a podcast.
And it almost always turns out fantastically.
Almost.
So, almost always.
Almost. Vancouver? What? Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the early days.
North to Vancouver from DC.
Sorry, little inside joke. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about those early days. Some of the first shows were a little
dodgy.
Rough?
Yeah.
To the point where you can no longer access them on iTunes. That is on purpose.
Yes, that is.
So what changes got made early on that helped smooth out some of the rough edges?
Yeah, it really came in, I guess you can consider it sort of three main phases. The first shift was to better uniform equipment. We were just using sort of whatever we had lying around the house, whatever sort of like video game chat equipment we had. And that was not up to
not
the
ideal.
Task.
Not
yeah.
ideal.
So we got that fixed. The second was improving our audio processing and on sort of on the software and me getting smarter about using Audacity, which is the software we use to put the show together, using Levelator to make sure everything comes out nice and sort of getting more accustomed to that software. And the third, and this is what we're continuing to be in the process of, is improving ourselves. Our equipment's pretty good. Our software setup's pretty good. And now we're just working on our own professionalism and smoothness as we talk.
We consistently need upgrades.
How we doing
to our
on
software.
That? Okay, Jill?
I really enjoyed the evolution of our segments. I think when we started, we did kind of more lengthy headlines, and I think we've gotten a little quicker about things.
The
and
long shows. Do you remember in the beginning? They were like really long shows.
We've been
and
more
who was
succinct.
The one who said, guys, these need to be half as long?
Yeah.
Oh,
that was Lauren.
Me.
No, yeah, Lauren, I mean, talking earlier about your role in the show, I think Lauren is our, like, improvement person. Someone, you know, continuous quality whatever you want to, aficionado in terms of how to make the show better and better.
One of the things I was thinking about with this was she's great at helping us work on overused words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That said,
on the other hand,
yeah.
I want to say something that's interesting is that, and probably people, well, our original focus group realizes this, but maybe not other people, that originally it was just going to be Chris and I. You know, we'd said that Chris and I were going to do this show and that Lauren and Jill were going to occasionally jump on and things like that. Maybe they do a segment here or there. And I remember in some of our early test audiences, they're like, you know, the show's great, but you really need more Lauren and Jill. And I think that's been for the better. And I think we've smoothed it out to be, it's an equal partnership among the four of us, which I really mm-hmm. love and I think helps add a component to this show that a lot of other shows don't. And I think that's really, really what makes it special. Something else I think is interesting is that in the beginning, I personally had to plan and rehearse so much. I was nervous about speaking about, you know, even movies, something, a topic I feel very comfortable in. But as we've moved on, and Lauren is really, again, I want to give her the most credit for doing this, saying, you know, don't try to script yourself so much. Just kind of talk about what you know and have confidence in your intellect and your education, your experience in the field.
Very true. Very true. So on that note, what would we say are some of the biggest challenges we've had to overcome?
Vikings.
Not Vikings. Jill, please say something real.
Okay. So this is our 100th show, and actually recording every week has been a huge challenge. Every week. Yeah, holidays, baseball games, illnesses, second job, nights on call.
Traveling.
Parking dogs. Traveling. Oh my gosh. How many different towns have we recorded from?
Oh, so many.
Hiding out in our parents' basements, trying to, while we're home for Christmas break, you know?
Sitting in closets because it's the only place you can be alone.
Well, what's funny is how in the beginning we all had to be in separate rooms. Now we do it a lot more communally. But in the beginning we all had our own headsets. We had to have four computers. And so visiting together was actually worse.
Harder.
Right. Because we had to like.
Who has four rooms in their apartment?
Exactly. Which I think is interesting.
What else?
Well, for me, I have to say, I am, if you have listened to the show, not the most concise person, and I tend to be a little verbose. And so learning how to sort of say what I want to say in short, concise sentences has been something it was a challenge for me, but also patience with growth, right? I think anyone wants to start a project and become the next big thing. And I think something that I've learned is that to be successful in this podcasting industry is to mean you just keep doing it and growth will come with time.
Very true. Chris, what do you think?
I think the biggest challenges have been a couple of production disasters we've had.
As a sound engineer, that makes sense.
Working on the show. It took us a while to really get used to the equipment and how everything was going to work, and we've still had some catastrophic failures from just Dropbox syncing or somebody had the wrong mic attached. I think all of us have had to actually go back and overdub a show
after
the fact.
All of us have not had to.
So everyone but Fox? Yeah.
Fortunately, nothing like that has happened in a very long time. We've gotten way better at it.
Yeah.
And like you said, Jill, one of the most challenging things has just been the schedule, trying to bring it together every week.
Sometimes it's just brutal. So let's flip it around and say, what are some of our greatest triumphs? Mm. What moments have there been when it was like, wow, this is actually working. We're not just wasting our time here.
Yeah.
So I can think of two, a small and a large. And I remember waking up one morning and getting an email from the San Diego Comic-Con International in 2012 and saying, you have been approved as press for that conference. And I remember thinking that was a real sense of validation. We're a real grassroots organization. And so to get that initial recognition of a press credential from such a big organization was awesome. But I think the biggest moment for me was we were also recognized as press by South by Southwest. Not only were we recognized as press, but we were afforded the opportunity to interview people like Joss Whedon, like Nathan Fillion, like Matthew McConaughey. And
on the red carpet.
On the red carpet. Yeah. And to anyone out there who's had a hero, imagine being able to sit down for just even a few seconds and talk to that hero in their prime. It's such an amazing and rewarding experience. And that was really that sense of validation for me that this is something we created special from nothing, but just completely out of passion. And so those would be the moments for me.
Awesome. Chris?
I've got two that are related to each other. The first one is I remember when we first started trying to convince our friends to listen to the show, like, really, we want your feedback, please listen. And it's been such a transition over the years. Now, like, my friends are excited to talk to me about the show, and they all seem to listen of their own volition and not because I threaten them anymore.
Right, that's helpful.
I think secondary to that is our listenership in general has just continued to creep upward. I remember when we'd have 30 listeners to a show, and I never really expected it to climb much higher than that. And honestly, I'd still be doing the show if it didn't. But it's fun to have bigger listenership.
It has climbed a lot from there.
Yes, it has.
Jill, what do you think?
Yeah, I think you put this really nicely a couple weeks ago, Lauren. You know, it used to be tens of listeners, most of whom we either knew or related to. And then we started having thousands of listeners from all around the world, which sort of blows my mind. Not even just people in the U.S., you know?
Yeah, that was a crazy thing to me when we realized exactly how many international listeners we had. It's a significant
like 100 different
chunk of our listenership.
Like, how could that many people be listening?
And also, the other weird thing for me, I have to say, is when we figured out that people were Googling my name. That was
weird.
Well,
there was a debate, right? Like, which Geek Scholar was the hottest based on their voice? And they thought because Lauren was the most snarky that she had to be the hottest. Like, I think they imagine you with tattoos and dressed in cosplay every night doing the show.
Patently
like,
false. That's patently false.
Come on, ladies. It's Geek Scholar Chris coming at you from the radio
that'll
all night long.
Be enough of that. Thank you very much.
I'd like to throw in one more quick moment. And this was at this past year's San Diego Comic-Con. There were several times where I walked around in my Geek Scholar shirt and people came up to me and said hi and said they listened to the show and they wanted a piece of swag. And that blew my mind. And that was really cool, especially in Hall H. We had several people come up. We were tweeting and we were doing it on Facebook and they said, hey, I'm a fan of the show. Can I have a deck of playing cards, whatever we were giving out? And that was a really, really cool, special moment for me.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, one of the things that's been most surprising to me is how we've been able to keep cranking this thing out every week, like we said. And I don't know that we've ever had to skip a week entirely because of scheduling conflicts or for any other reason.
No.
Yeah,
and
never.
We've had some doozy reasons. But we've all had to make sacrifices to make that happen. So what is it that keeps us going? Why do we soldier on?
Yeah, we have put a podcast together every single week for the past 100 weeks. We have never missed one.
Not one.
In fact, only very rarely have we ever been a host or two short. In all, I was counting back, we have done 111 shows.
That's incredible.
Including our specials and our interviews. So it's never not a highlight of my week. I just really enjoy putting it together.
Yeah, I'm going to say I just love it. It's so much fun. That's why you want to put so much energy into it, because you enjoy it so much just because it's, you know, the highlight of your week.
No, I agree. I think the reason why we've been successful, and I would call us a success, every week everyone's very excited and has a lot of fun with it. But at the same time, we somehow get better at it.
Yeah, we do. We do for sure. And I would be remiss here if I didn't call out the few times when we have been a host short, we have had guest hosts step in. So I want to call out definitely Samantha Smith over at Film Positivism, who has been an awesome guest host from time to time. Tom Chick has been on the show. Michelle Alexandria over at EclipseMagazine.com.
Nelson Diaz.
We really appreciate your participation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Definitely.
And Eclipse Magazine, I think, has just been a great partner with us.
They have.
You know, they're a little bit of a bigger news entity. And so they've been...
Yeah, they've opened some serious doors.
A lot of opportunities that we wouldn't have otherwise had.
Yeah.
Thanks, Michelle. So what do we want to see for the future of Geek Scholars? What happens next?
Well, you know me, I'm the one with the ideas, so I'm constantly trying to help us grow. I think our next big step is we're trying to hire an intern. So if you are interested in working with us, we're looking for someone who's interested in the realm of social media and marketing. We want someone with great ideas on how to expand our presence virtually on Twitter, Facebook, things like that. But for me, I think it's time we had more interviews. I would love to see us going to more festivals, more conventions, and having a bigger presence.
Yeah, absolutely correct. And I think, you know, someday, speaking for Chris and I, we'd love to get back into a bigger movie market where we can access some premieres and stuff like that, too.
Madison's a great town, but not too many premieres.
Yeah, screenings, not a lot of film press tours going through.
There's actually a surprisingly good Wisconsin Film Festival, but...
That is true. And I also, we'd love to be somewhere where we could do live podcast recordings, where we could get, you know, a fan base to show up, so where we could do a live recording in person.
Yeah,
I love that.
And just getting
idea.
To know our fans better, whether in person or virtually, I think is something we would love to do as well.
I am the economist, so I always have to come the money angle. I think it would be a blast to team up with one of these big podcast networks that's out there, and maybe we could actually earn a little revenue on all the effort that we put into this thing.
Or not, whatever. Yeah. Okay, now, Jill, back in the early days, am I right in saying that you probably felt the least comfortable with the whole recording our own voices to be listened to by strangers thing?
Probably, of the four of us.
Yeah.
You didn't major
but,
in public
speaking.
I mean,
you're obviously totally comfortable now, and it seems like there have been breakthroughs along the way. Like, I'm thinking of that time when you hadn't slept in like 24 hours and you had to record anyway, and then you had an awesome show.
It was a great show.
I think it's because you were just too tired to care. What has that transition been like for you?
Yeah, you know, I don't really mind speaking in front of groups of people, but it does seem different having your voice recorded so that people can play it back for some reason. But I think as we started doing it, I just enjoyed it so much that I didn't really care. And one of the things, and Fox sort of mentioned this earlier on, I think, is we did the first episode and just the overwhelming response was, we need more Lauren and Jill.
That's
which
true, yeah.
We really went into the first episode thinking, like, we'll help occasionally. And I'm sure that's part of how Fox convinced me that this was an amazing idea, because I would have little, if anything, to do on a weekly basis and it would keep him busy. But
yeah, and I was thinking maybe we'd prefer it that way in case the whole thing crashed and burned. We were only, like, tangentially related to it.
But I love it. I mean, from the very first show, it's been super, super fun. And I loved that people wanted to hear more of the two of us, because I really do think we present a different opinion than Fox and Chris do.
Definitely.
And I think that's been really good for the show.
Yeah. Awesome. So what is your very favorite part of doing the show, Jill?
Well, of course, I have to say hanging out with my best friends for an hour every week is super fun.
You do have to say that.
Because you are contractually obligated if we had contracts with anyone.
But also, and I don't mean this to sound gooey or sentimental, but I really love all the celebrities that Fox has gotten to meet.
Aww.
Like, I know, you know, movie reviews and being a film critic has always been a really important part of his career. I think it's been more than a hobby for him since I've known him. And it's been so cool for me to see him get to interview famous people and also to be really good at it. And I love that.
Yeah.
And he is.
Yep.
Aww.
Okay. Fox, what about you? What's your favorite part?
Well,
famous people.
It really, how am I going to top that?
You can't. That's it.
No, I can't. I think I pass. No, I have to say, I have very few outlets for my passions, and I think everyone needs outlets for their passions, and you need to be, passions are only enhanced when you can share them with the people you love. I am fortunate that we are not all blood related, but we're all family in my eyes. And so it's fun for me, the fact that I get to share what I'm most passionate about with the people I love, because it's legitimately fun. And again, Chris, something you said earlier, if no one listened, I could pretend that everyone did and we would do this for fun and I would have a blast every week doing it. And that really is the truth. And if I had to talk to someone professionally though, other than the mushy sentiment I just gave, I love talking to the fans. You know, I said before, one of my roles is the public relations coordinator, and we say, and we mean it, we get back to every piece of fan mail or comment we get. And I love that. I really love when someone writes and says, hey, I listened to your show and I have this opinion, I want to discuss it with you further. That's something I really enjoy, because it helps further the whole culture of cinema. Because it opens a dialogue and I enjoy pushing that forward.
Okay. So, as the one with the actual movie critic background and as the one who definitely puts the most hours in on this thing, what are you the most proud of?
Gosh, first of all, I'm proud it's in existence. I think there are so many podcasts that come and go because people get frustrated. And I think it's because they're doing it for the wrong reasons. I think this one, again, as I said, has been successful because we do it because we want to and it's fun for no other reason. So that to start, but also I think we have plans for the future. I think the idea that we love where we've gone, we'd be happy if it stopped here, but we also have some great ideas on what it could do further. Secondly, I have to say, I'm proud that I'm a fan of the show. We just released number 99. I put out there that it was one of my favorite shows. I listened to it. I finished it. I listened to it again. I enjoyed it that much. And I think that because I'm a fan of it, that makes me all the more proud of it.
All right. Well, Chris, we'll turn to you. You're definitely the biggest fan of podcasting among us.
Probably
listeners,
true.
Listeners, just so you know, this man listens to literally dozens of podcasts every week at 1.5 to 2 times speed just so he can fit more of them into his schedule. So, Chris, how has your love of podcasts affected what you do on the show? And how has what you do on our show affected how you perceive other podcasts?
Yeah, my iPhone doesn't even have any actual music on it. I just listen to podcasts. I just love learning and keeping up with current events as much as I can. And I enjoy getting to know the people who are bringing me that information. Mm-hmm. And I think the audio really conveys that significantly better than print media. Mostly, other shows have inspired me. It's no secret that Geek Scholars draws a lot of inspiration from the ESPN show and podcast PTI, pardon the interruption.
Yep.
We're just trying to get as much news out there with a little bit of fun and analysis so you can get about and move on with your day, you know? And I am continually aspiring to be like 1/10, 1/100th as talented at audio production as the folks who do the NPR podcast Radio Lab.
Those guys are
so incredibly talented. And I'm always picking up new ideas and tricks from other shows. I even write people who produce other podcasts to sort of get their opinions on things. That said, producing the show has given me way, way less patience for shows with low production quality or poor editing. It's just not that hard to be substantially better, people.
I'd like to take this opportunity to call out how much of a magician and wizard Chris is. You know, I've watched this show evolve from having ums and uhs and awkward pauses and weird moments where people are talking over each other to this seamless thing that he creates every week, and I've tried to do it. So in the early days, Chris and I both tried our hand at Saturday, and I almost wanted to rip my monitor apart with my bare hands because it's tough, people. If you've
it's
never
seriously
done,
stressful, it's, and we hand him crap on a platter, and he turns it into a show for us. It's amazing.
Chris is from someone who does not have, unless he was hiding it, a background in audio engineering.
No,
he does an incredible job, and it's something that you don't notice because it's so good. A good show sounds great because you can't even tell it's been worked on so hard. And Chris works many, many hours at making it sound flawless. And he deserves so much credit for all the quality the show has.
Oh, thanks, guys. That's sweet.
Definitely. So, Chris, what's your favorite part of doing the show?
I just love being able to do something creative, particularly in conjunction with my wife, especially, and my good friends. And just putting something artistic, something creative, something that I did out into the world and then getting feedback or even having to say, Fox, like you said, defending it, you know, to people who I feel like I can't be lazy. I can't just make up an opinion or throw something out there if I don't really believe it or if I can't. Exactly, because I'm going to get called out on it. So look, it's forcing me to have better, smarter opinions and voice them more clearly. I also have a really compelling excuse to see movies almost every week, which means I'm going to have to see something even that I won't like. But it helps me broaden my perspective. And I'm building up a serious movie actor, director database in my head. And that's fun, too.
Well, speaking for myself to wrap it up, my favorite part of the show is definitely getting to spend an hour or so every week with you people, even when we want to kill each other, even when we're tired to the point of delirium, even when there is no reasonable way to get a show done in a given week, we get it done anyway. I love that. It's been a real adventure, and listeners, thanks for joining us along the way.
Absolutely.
Okay, enough of the mushy stuff. Let's get back to what happened this week along with the preview review. We're going to start out with the trailer for The Monuments Men, which just hit. It's a true story about a group of art experts who worked with U.S. military during World War II to save historical pieces of architecture and priceless artwork. Starring George Clooney, Matt Damon, Bill Murray, John Goodman, and Cate Blanchett. What'd you think, guys?
I thought this trailer looked awesome. It's a great story. So, especially for me personally, who loves historical and period films, I think this is going to be a real winner. The casting for this is exceptional. I mean, these are all great, great actors.
All A-listers.
Yeah. And for this story in particular, you can just see them settling into these roles really well. It's interesting because they're not what you would typically think of as kind of the average World War II soldier. And
no.
I think this is going to reveal a really interesting side of the war that not a lot of people know about. The only thing that I really didn't care for in the trailer was the music. It was really just an odd choice of music, and I thought it gave it sort of a weird feel. If you just looked at the footage, it looked awesome, but there's something that was like a little bit off about the music.
Yeah. I agree, Jill. This is an absolutely fascinating piece of history and a really stellar cast.
Yeah.
And I like the aesthetic of this movie. It looks really nice. And I can't wait to see, of course, these actors playing off of one another. I think it's going to be made for some really, really fun moments.
Yeah.
But the trailer, to me, seems not entirely sure what tone the filmmaker is going for. And maybe you're right, Joel. Maybe the music has something to do with that.
I think it kind of contradicted what you saw on the screen.
See, mm-hmm. and I'm going to speak to both of your points because I think that's exactly the point. I think of soldiers as people who go out and they are willing to put their lives on the line for something beyond themselves. And in most cases, it's love of country. These men put their lives on the line for art, for the love of culture. And that's a very somber idea. Yet at the same time, because the fact that they are not real soldiers, they have to go through basic training, there's something rather comedic about that.
Yeah.
To me, I thought the music was a way of balancing the somber with the script, as you said, Chris, with these very comedic lines that are probably very accurate with these ideas of not knowing what to do. And I thought the music with the dialogue shown in the script was a way of trying to neutralize the idea that this is both kind of funny and also kind of harrowing at the same time.
I don't know. I was kind of picking up on the something not seeming like it fits quite right. Just the structure of the movie itself doesn't seem too appealing from the trailer, but I mean, it could go wildly either direction.
Sure.
From what we know now. It's definitely getting a bump in grade for me because of the topic being an art history nerd and because of the casting. I love Cate Blanchett. So I'm in. I'm definitely seeing this. What did you guys get for grades?
For me, it was an A minus, and really minus just because the music wasn't right.
I also said A minus.
I'm going A.
Yeah, I went with B plus, and that's about an accurate breakdown for the four of us, I think. Two A minuses, an A, and a B plus.
There you go.
All right, so moving on to the movie review for Elysium. This is Neil Blomkamp's follow-up to District 9, this one being another sci-fi action adventure. Starring Matt Damon as a man living on a poverty-stricken Earth, attempting to reach the space station Elysium, where all of the world's wealth and wealthy people currently reside. So, what do we think for positives? What did this film do right?
Well, one of the things Neil Blomkamp is incredibly good at for the films that we've seen is building a world. And this world, at least visually, is impeccably well-crafted. The interactions between humans and androids were both hilarious and just horrifically awful. And I really felt like particularly the Earth aspect of this had some truth to it. And I really like that.
I really like that they use so many talented Latino actors. I think that was maybe one of the most striking things to me. The guy who plays Matt Damon's best friend, Diego Luna, this is going to blow your mind. You ready? He also played the suicidal lover in Milk.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. He's amazing. He's just an amazing talent that we don't see enough of in the States. And Wagner Mara, who played Spider.
Outstanding, yeah.
Also outstanding.
Great.
And Alice Braga, the female lead, was also really well cast.
Alice Braga's a female lead, not Jodie Foster. How is she?
Well, Jodie Foster, we'll get to that.
Okay, sorry.
Not in the positive section, evidently.
I wouldn't call her the female lead, no.
Okay.
It was a supporting role for her, and she is a great actress. I mean, nobody can deny that, but it was a really kind of a misuse of her star power, I feel like. And the intentions of the character just wasn't very well written.
I agree. There's only so much a great actor can do with a character who's not written in a way that's very complex or where their motivations are really clear.
Yeah.
Okay. She especially just came across as totally evil, and you're not even sure why she is or what her goal is.
There's no clear motivations there, and William Fichtner kind of had the same problem.
Yeah, exactly right. They're both absolutely stellar actors who we've called out on the show in the past, but their characters are just so muddy here.
They're kind of mishandled.
There's only so much they could do. The whole story, honestly, felt pretty squishy. Just a lot of these plot elements, a lot of the character motivations just didn't feel as fleshed out as they should have been. It was just a lot of murkiness involved, and it made the world, which was the strongest suit of the movie, feel weaker and less plausible.
Yeah, it's got none of the subtlety and allegory that District 9 had, and it doesn't hold a candle to it, I don't think, honestly.
I agree completely.
Chris, you and I saw the first footage for this over a year ago. I'm just curious, how did you feel that footage represented what the final product ended up being?
A lot of what we saw in that footage were the action sequences, and the action sequences were very, very good.
They were, okay.
But the sinew that tied it all together was not enough to hold up the structure.
Yeah, I mean, they did a lot of just, like, reading out a backstory for this thing in the opening scene, and the backstory they gave was kind of weak and silly, and there was at least one whatever device that cropped up.
Really
listeners,
obvious,
if you don't know what a whatever device is, it's a reference to a movie called Thank You for Smoking, where these people are basically paying these actors big money to smoke in a movie about space. Which, as you might know, might be an explosion problem. And he says, it's a one-line fix. Thank God for the whatever device. You know, so that's a whatever device. When you have to build something into a plot to make your concept work, that's exactly what this movie was up to.
So I just one last question for you guys, give your grades. This is the sophomore effort from Neil Blomkamp. Is this going to help or hurt his career? Do we think he's going to get bigger and better projects, or is this going to be a step backwards?
I think it'll redirect him a little bit. I think that he's probably best in these smaller budget, slightly lower ambition movies. That's where his, and I think had this honestly been a smaller budget, a little bit tighter, a little bit more constrained, he could have found the truth of it and really made it something strong.
It could be that he, with a bigger budget project with a bunch of big names attached to it, he personally had less control over the thing, and that's totally true.
Yeah.
Hopefully he'll take the reins again and really figure out his next step with some intention.
What did you guys think of for your grades then?
It's not bad at all, but I just couldn't help but be disappointed. It didn't work as well as I wanted it to. I'm saying B minus.
Yeah, I went C plus. A pretty middling effort. But that about wraps it up, and we'll turn now to trivia, and I believe it's my turn.
Uh-oh.
Get ready.
All right.
If you had to guess what this week's topic was, what would you guess?
Is it us?
Yes, it is. Oh
my gosh.
Uh-oh. Love it.
So what was the very first movie review on the very first episode of Geek Scholars recorded on August 21st of 2011?
Oh, wow.
I have a hint if you want a hint.
Yeah. What's
that? Although I love that none of you actually remember.
No, all I remember is talking about The Great Wall.
I remember talking about Ghostbusters 3.
Do you want to know who starred in the movie we're reviewing?
Sure.
Sure.
Anton Yelchin, Colin Farrell, Toni Collette, and David Tennant.
Oh, it was Fright Night. I saw Fright Night.
Oh.
Ding, ding. It was Fright Night. The oh-so-forgettable Fright Night.
Good question.
All right, Jill, why don't you tell us what's coming out in wide release this weekend?
All right, we've got Kick-Ass 2, the sequel to the cult hit comic book adaptation about a bunch of ordinary people, young and old, who decide to become superheroes and villains, rated R. Lee Daniels, The Butler, a look inside the life of Cecil Gaines, a man who served at the White House as head butler under 8 different presidents for 3 decades, which is rated PG-13. Paranoia, a corporate espionage thriller starring Harrison Ford and Gary Oldman with Liam Hemsworth, Caught in the Middle, and that's rated PG-13. And Jobs, a biopic about Apple innovator Steve Jobs with Ashton Kutcher in the starring role, and that's also rated PG-13. And Chris, in limited release...
Got a few out in limited release I want to call out. The first is Anthem Bodies Saints, starring Rooney Mara and Casey Affleck, about a couple of outlaws in the 1970s Texas Hill Country. Texas represent, even if they're outlaws. Yeah,
I'm sure that's the Texas part you want to represent.
Goodness.
Next is Cutie and the Boxer, which is a documentary about an 80-year-old boxer painter and his wife, who's an illustrator, and their 40-year marriage. That's rated R.
What's a
and
boxer?
Finally, this is just for you, Fox, is Drew, the man behind
Drew
the poster.
Strizen.
That's right. That's a documentary about the iconic painter of movie posters like Back to the Future, Indiana Jones, and Star Wars.
He is so the man. That is it for this week's show number 100. As always, we encourage all of you to subscribe to the Geek Scholars Movie News podcast on iTunes. While you're there, don't forget to give us a review and visit our website, geekscholars.com.
We also love hearing from our listeners, so write us at mail@geekscholars.com or leave us a comment on our Facebook site. We do try to answer every single piece of mail we get, so if you send us something, we'll get back to you ASAP. We also encourage all of our listeners to check out EclipseMagazine.com, another great entertainment website, and the music of the 440 Alliance, who graciously allow us to use their songs on our podcast. Finally, take the feedback survey on our website to help us make the podcast even more glorious than it already is.
If it's possible.
Until next week, this is Jill.
And Lauren.
And Fox.
And Chris saying, from 2 years in our past.
Welcome one and all to the Geek Scholars Movie News, your weekly source for film, headlines, previews, and reviews, all in glorious podcast form. I'm Fox.
And I'm Chris. And with us today are fellow Geek Scholars Lauren.
Hello.
And Jill.
Hello.
That does a thumb sideways. That is a lack of a thumb.
Okay, let me redo it. Let me redo it.
Yeah, like that. Yes.
Oh my god.
Keep doing that. That's why I was laughing so hard earlier. I started crying.
You didn't see that.
Jill was doing the wrong magic trick.
I decided to spin it for the G-rated audience that we have.
That was wise.
She just likes proving me wrong because it happens like once a year.
It's true. You were wrong.
That's one.
Okay, everybody revel.
Yep.
Revel, revel, revel.
Nice. Sorry.